This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, January 12th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News. We'll also check the forecast, a chilly one for the week ahead of us. But first, a look at today's news. Supporters of U.S. Senate appointee Roland Burris have asked for meetings with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. The 12 leaders of the National Coalition for Fairness and Justice in the U.S. Senate say they have sent letters to the senators requesting Burris be seated immediately. In the letter to Durbin, the group accuses the Illinois senator of playing political ping pong. Meanwhile, Durbin said Sunday that he wanted a resolution to the disagreement soon. He said lawyers first need to sign off on Burris's paperwork and review his testimony before the Illinois House. In a news release, the group said members planned a massive mobilization effort this week if Burris was not seated. Meanwhile, Durbin says he's moving away from resisting the former Illinois Attorney General as President-elect Barack Obama's successor. The Senate's second-in-command says he hopes a resolution to the disagreement will be reached soon. For his part, Burris said he and his lawyers will be in Washington today to begin paving the way for him to join the Senate. But Durbin said lawyers still need to sign off on that paperwork to review testimony before the Illinois House that Burris gave last week. Now that the Illinois House has formally impeached Governor Blagojevich, the matter is before the state Senate. Just how the Senate will handle the impeachment trial is taking shape, as Amanda Vinicky reports.
It will be the first time a governor will be tried in the state Senate, so the chamber's in the process of putting rules in place. Republican Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon is on a special committee responsible for setting those procedures. He says one issue had been if the Senate's deliberations would be public or private. Ryder says what's been settled on is entirely fair.
To both sides, both to the governor and to the prosecution side, and fairness along with an openness, a transparency that allows the press and the public to see everything that goes on.
The rules still need to be adopted by the full Senate, but members of the committee say they have agreed that to close the deliberations from public view, it will require a two-thirds vote, meaning both Democratic and Republican votes are needed. In a statement, Governor Blagojevich indicated that because it will be a trial, he is hopeful the Senate will treat him more favorably than the House. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Illinois House Republican leader Tom Cross says the Democrats' failure to push for a special election for President-elect Barack Obama's Senate seat was a huge mistake. Speaking yesterday on WGN Radio, Cross said it remains to be seen whether the Democratic Party will be hurt by the scandal surrounding the governor. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, speaking before Cross on WGN, said he doesn't think a bill taking away the governor's power to appoint Obama's replacement would have stopped Blagojevich from making the appointment. Madigan said even if the legislature had passed a special election bill, Blagojevich could have vetoed it and made the appointment before an override vote could be held. Some state lawmakers and health care advocates are pressing scandal-plagued Governor Rod Blagojevich to immediately release $8 million in state reimbursements for children's specialty doctors that he allegedly used to seek a campaign contribution. Blagojevich was charged December 9th in a criminal complaint accusing him of threatening to withhold the reimbursements unless he got a campaign donation from a hospital executive. The governor has denied wrongdoing. In a statement yesterday, Blagojevich said he ordered an increase of reimbursement rates for pediatric hospitals in September, but they won't take effect until February. Race will no longer be a factor in determining where a child in Champaign attends grade school. Beginning with the next academic year, the Unit 4 Controlled Choice Program will instead base its school assignments on income. The change was a result of two factors: the 2007 Supreme Court decision that declared race in school assignments as unconstitutional, and the anticipated end of Unit 4's consent decree. It's scheduled to expire the end of June. But Diedrich Martin, the district's director of equity and achievement, says parents should notice little change as their children enroll in kindergarten.
Because a disproportionate number of our African-American families or school-age kids who attend schools in Champaign already qualify for free or reduced lunch services, we will still be able to obtain a good racial balance throughout all of our schools by changing to this variable, while also being conscious and staying within the guidelines of the law.
The community meeting tomorrow night will help parents prepare for this change. Martin says consultant Michael Alves will address parents. He's run through some scenarios in which the race factor was replaced with income, and the outcomes were remarkably similar. Many other factors won't change. Martin says parents can still list their top three choices for schools. The district will use proximity from home as a factor, and Unit 4 will try to unite siblings as much as possible. The meeting with the consultant is tomorrow at 7 p.m. At the Mellon Administrative Center. Other meetings on the district's controlled choice program will be held this month. They're listed on Unit 4's website. Judicial authorities in Madison County in southern Illinois have established a court that will deal only with military veterans charged with nonviolent crimes. Chief Circuit Court Judge Ann Callis says the court is the first of its kind in the state and probably only the third in the nation. Callis says participation in veterans court will work similarly to drug court, in which people accused of crimes can enter the program voluntarily and receive treatment instead of a possible criminal conviction. She's appointed Circuit Court Judge Charles Romani Jr. to be in charge of the Veterans Court. As a Vietnam veteran, Romani says he has seen the connection between military service and the need for mental health and substance abuse services. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bonner. President-elect Obama takes office, he takes on important responsibilities, some of which have more to do with the practicalities of life in the White House. Commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
President-elect Obama takes office in just a few days. Or, more formally, the term of 4 years shall commence on the 20th day of January. That's a part of the federal statutes, which often speak with a less giddy voice than ordinary people do. But those federal statutes do more than simply pinpoint the day of the presidential inauguration. They also give us insight into some pretty nice perks that come with the presidency. Of course, there's a decent salary, $400,000 paid by law in monthly installments. I say decent, by the way, because even though the salary has doubled in recent times, it's probably less than Senator Obama would have been making had he kept working at the hotshot Chicago law firm where he met his wife. The president doesn't have to use that salary for incidentals arising from the job, of course. Under another statute, one titled Traveling Expenses, Congress can appropriate up to $100,000 for the president's travels to be used in the discretion of the president and accounted for on his certificate solely. Another statute authorizes both the intriguing official entertainment expenses of the president and the somewhat boring sums for the upkeep of air conditioning, heating, and lighting at the White House, including, just to be clear, electric power and fixtures. Then there's the all-purpose assistance to the president for unanticipated needs. The money, up to $1 million, is supposed to go toward the furtherance of the national interest, security, or defense. So it's not an open-ended sort of thing, and the president must explain all such expenditures to Congress. But the presidency is about more than money, of course, even in a perk sense. Putting aside the prestige and the power, what lawyer also gets a big old historic mansion to live in for the duration of the job? Again, the law explains the precise presidential perk here. The president shall be entitled also to use of the furniture and other effects belonging to the United States and kept in the executive residence at the White House. And lest anyone get any ideas about modern plastic stuff, by statute, the White House is supposed to be a repository for the best specimens of early American furniture. Congress didn't trust the president or his family to make those calls. They're not supposed to be the judges of what's best in early American and what isn't. Instead, a committee of art historians has full power to select and pass on donated articles alleged to be the best. Furniture itself, in fact, is given perhaps the most attention in the relevant White House statutes. In addition to provenance and value, all furniture purchased for the use of the executive residence at the White House, the law mandates, shall be, as far as practicable, of domestic manufacture. And it's not up to the Obamas to keep track of all those niceties. Another statute explains that the housekeeper is responsible for all public property in the executive residence. So when President-elect Obama takes office later this month, he takes on more than what people say is the most important job in the world. He'll have a decent salary, pocket change for his travels, and a mansion to tend to, too, with all the early American trimmings. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In our forecast, cloudy skies today, a chance of rain or snow this afternoon. The high around 32 degrees. Snow likely tonight, a chance of snow after midnight. Accumulation around an inch, lows around 14. Blustery with winds up to 25 miles per hour. Very cold tomorrow, partly sunny. The high around 14 with scattered flurries. Temperatures falling in the afternoon with blustery conditions. Colder and mostly cloudy Tuesday night. The low around 4 degrees. Gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Windy Wednesday, mostly cloudy. A chance of snow. The high around 20. Southwest winds up to 35 miles per hour. Wind chill readings 5 to 15 below zero in the morning. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries. Lows around 2, mostly clear and bitterly cold Thursday. The high around 7 and lows around 6 below zero. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, January 12th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, WILL.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.